What's good? Welcome back to Agitator, the only freestyle storytelling podcast starring two Mystic Juggalo Weebs. Today, we have a very special guest star, ADR director, English dub director for Sentai, Mr. Shannon Reed, the man of many, 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 many talents, working behind the scenes on some just a laundry list of kick-ass anime. How's it going?
Good, good. Thank you for the introduction.
No,
Yeah, man,
absolutely.
I was Googling you, and I literally called Kelby, and I was like, "So this dude does what? Like everything?
Yeah,
Seems
I
like he do a little bit of everything."
it's a big industry. But no, it's a cool business to be a part of, and I'm really thankful that I got into it. Like my whole background is just coming from production, and so I'm based out of Texas, and so when it comes to narrative storytelling, it's I don't want to say that it's scarce, but you see a lot of like corporate businesses and like promotional videos and things here and there, but when it comes to narrative storytelling, it's rare to come by, 'cause like, there is an industry there and there's like an indie scene and stuff like that. But I'm really thankful that I came across like anime, and then just in the area that I was at, because it's like I get to my whole thing is like I'm all about telling stories, and so being a part of an industry where you're telling narrative stories, like it's like I'm really glad that I'm a part of this and stuff. So it was a cool thing to come across. What was your intro into it? How did you get that that foot in the door? What was the trajectory there?
Well, for me, I was from Houston, and so really like when it comes to like English dubs, there's studios like across the US and stuff like that, but Texas is like the big place to go, like between Dallas and Houston. And so at the time I didn't know that, and like my whole background, like I studied digital film, video production. I did a lot of freelance, worked on sets, did commercials and stuff. And I was from Houston, and I knew that I was gonna be in Houston for quite a while. And so at the time, like I was just looking for just production jobs. And so since I was also a video editor, and I knew that the most common job that I would be able to get, like a consistent paying job in Houston, was to like just promote yourself as a video editor and just like go for just editing jobs, because like everyone needs an editor. And so, but for most likely you're going to be doing, some type of corporate work. And so, I just put my resume out there, and I had some friends. I had a friend that worked in the with Sentai, and so he told me that there's a place that's looking for video editors. And I was like, oh yeah, put my name out there. And I had actually another friend that was also working there too, and it was like, yeah, I know, I got this place that I'm working at, they're looking for video editors. It's like, send them my resume. And then it wasn't until I had this old professor from college that was like, I was doing some freelancing, like he taught audio engineering. And so I talked to him, and he was like, yeah, there's this place that I'm kind of doing some work with and stuff, and they're looking for video editors. And so for him, I was like, yeah, absolutely, like send them all my stuff, and give them my email and everything. And so it's kind of funny, because like all these places, my friends and my professor, they were all talking about the same place, and it's like, oh wow, okay. And so given the like I got the email, and then I did like a interview, like a kind of like a Zoom call interview and stuff, and going over things. And it's like it was kind of like the same type of interview process for like any other job, where it's like, you know, they're asking a bunch of technical questions on like how to do this and how to do that and stuff, and you respond. And then I got set up for like a second interview. And so it's like, okay, well, yeah, absolutely. But you know, at the time, it's like, you know, it was kind of like any other interview. You go through the steps. And so it wasn't until the in-person interview that you know, I went there dressed up in a suit, and as soon as I walked in the door, I see that like this was not what I was expecting, because in the back of my mind, I was kind of expecting just like another corporate job. And as soon as I walk in, I see like these red hallways. I see like all these posters and like all this anime and figures and stuff. And it's like, what is this place? And so, I mean, that was bad on my part to not really just like hone in, like, hey, like this, pay more attention to that. And so, when I met my well, future manager, but like in the in person, I you know, answered all the technical questions and everything I needed to do. And then I remember having a moment where I just paused, and I just asked them, I was like, I'm sorry, and I apologize. This is like so unprofessional. What is this? And so and so, you know, it was like, this is an anime company. And like my follow-up was like, it in Texas, really? And so he's like, yeah. And you know, and at the time, it's like, you know, I knew what anime was and stuff and all the things, but I was just so surprised that yeah, it's in Texas. And like the majority of the dubs that you hear comes out of Texas. And so that's when I, you know, first started. I first got hired as a video editor, but it wasn't until like right after I got hired, you know, I saw the more of like the company and what it has to offer. And it's like, and it's not just, you know, yeah, like I went in for editing, but it's like I saw that, oh, there are directors, there are engineers, there's like different departments, there's, you know, ADR, there's like production, as well as like art department, subtitling, all these different like areas, translations and stuff like that. And so as soon as I saw that, that's when I was like, oh my goodness, like I, like, you know, I applied myself specifically for a editor, because it's like, you know, boom. But as far as like my qualifications, it's like, no, like I've, you know, I've directed, I've written in other places, like, you know, I've worked different positions on set and stuff. And it's like, as soon as I saw just like how big this place really was, I was like showing, like coming back, bringing reels and stuff of my other work, where it's like, you know, I've done this, I've directed, I've written, I've done this and this. And so not long after that, like I started shadowing other directors, and like, you know, I got transitioned into directing, where for a time I was both working, you know, I would direct, but I would also be, you know, doing production work just like as a video editor. But I quickly transitioned into directing and stuff, because it's like, hey, I've got experience here. And so like it was a very smooth transition, and I've been directing there ever since. Like, yeah. So
No, Sentai is huge. Shouts out Luis Galindo, by the way, voice actor,
yeah.
homie of mine, real close friend of mine who linked us up. He his credentials, along with just because of Sentai, just because Sentai puts out, I mean, Vinland Saga, Food Wars, Parasite Maxim, Akame ga Kill, like it just goes on and on. Was that newer Ninja Kamui? Like,
Ninja
it's
Kamui slaps. That show
yeah.
was so good.
I'm curious when you say
directing. Can you take us through that process? What a director does?
Well, I mean, the director is responsible for like, I mean, it's multiple things, but I guess the if you broke it down, like you have they kind of guide the actors through the show. So when you watch a TV series, or just a series in general, you see the actors or you hear the actors in this platform. And so you hear their performances, you hear all the detail and nuances, like the tone shifts. And in the story, a character from the beginning to end has an arc, they have growth. And you can hear and see the level of emotion from beginning to end. Well, you see all of that on screen. But behind the scenes, the director is kind of like the guide in a way. Or they kind of help shape the tone, or like they give really just the direction for the actors to kind of get them in the right settings for each scene. And so, when like my basic day, like when we're recording a show, it's for the actor, for the most part, it's kind of like a cold read, where when you show up on the first day, like of course you got booked, you scheduled, you know your character, or you may not know your character. And so the very first day is like a brand new introduction to this is the show and this is the character you're playing. And so the director is responsible for breaking that down. As part of the job, you're supposed to really know everything there is, like any question that may pop up about the character, show, settings, any details. It's my responsibility to know everything and give you an answer. And so that's when we start recording, with each actor. It's my job to kind of break down the story as well as the situation, each scene, and where we're trying to carry and take the character in steps and stuff. So it's overall looking at a show in general, like it's a every show is a big show. Each show has layers and stuff like that, but it's your job to really just kind of break it down to an understanding level and find the voice of each character and really just kind of guide the actor through each scene. So this could be like a situation where it's like, okay, Kelby, you're playing this character. All right. Well, let me first tell you about the show. All right. This is going to be an isekai anime where your character is like the main character. He rules like this great land in this city and stuff, and then he gets isekai'd into like California 2015, and so now he's trying to figure out who he is, because he's lost his memory and he's trying to just regain just his who he is as a person and stuff. And so okay, that's like a broad breakdown of what this is and stuff. And then we go into like the details of the character, just what type of person he was, like beginning, like he was very, very mean, just like Stonewall type of person and stuff like that. But he's really layered because like he suffered from this and this, these traumatic situations, in this period of his life and stuff. And so where we're trying to go is we want to hit that core of just like there's a good person that's deep inside, deep down inside of him. And by the end of this, we're trying to unravel those layers and stuff. So the process, there's going to be a long arc and process, but I'm going to help guide you through the story along the way. And we're going to strip away those layers as we go. Now, when we focus, then you kind of zoom in even more. And so you've got your different scenes with your character. And so now I'm gonna break down. First, we're gonna find the voice and tune if we need to shift pitch. We need to, you know, adjust the tone of delivery. I may need a little bit, you know, a little bit more rasp in that delivery, a little bit lower and gruff and stuff, depending on what the character is. We find the voice and then we begin. And then we break down each scene by scene where it's like, okay, this scene, this is happening and stuff like that. And so, you know, give a breakdown and then we give a pass. And so after we give, you know, Kelby gives a pass, then, okay, well, that was very good. You know what? Let's. I want to go through this again. Let's give this a second pass. And this time, I want you to apply this. Okay. I want you to take your time and really, like, we're gonna adjust this delivery because it's like what your character is feeling is this or this. But so we need to let that show in there. So it's like we're really just kind of the directors guide you through. And, you know, help find the character. Because it's like, it's not just the director. Like, I mean, the director is supposed to know all of the details and all of the things. But, you know, it's the director as well as work from the actor, because the actor is we're utilizing the actor's voice. And so it's a working progress from beginning to end.
Right. So when you have somebody who comes in and you're like, all right, Kelby, check it out. You're on a show called Food Wars. Your character really likes food. likes food a lot. You got to coax those performances out too, right? I mean,
well, yeah.
How do you go about pitching like a Food Wars to an actor?
Well, I mean, I would say like, especially like Food Wars, you tell them what it is. Yeah. But
yeah. It's like, here's what's about to happen.
This is what it is. Yeah. But it's like every show has its thing. Like, you know, this is what Food Wars is. Yeah. It's a big competition and stuff where, you know, everyone is trying to prove that they're the best. Of course, food is like a big pushing factor that we're revolving around and stuff. But, you know, we break down the character. You're going to be playing this character and this is their story. This is their background. This is their passion. This is their drive. And even though like the overall, like, yeah, Food Wars can get incredibly goofy and over the top, but still, you know, there are points to hit where it's like, this is the goal of the show. And and each character is character driven. And so, you know, even as goofy as a show may be, there's still so many serious components to it. And so you want to take that serious approach when breaking down each character. Of course, when you see those funny moments and over the top moments, then, you know, some shows get like that. But the seriousness that you take approaching it is like it, that doesn't change. Like you always have this, like, you know, yeah, this is going to be funny, but the way that we go about it will be, you know, we're giving this our full attention.
I would imagine you have to embody that type of character even more, who is like, you know, busting off a meal they were just served, because that's, you don't want it to come across as this person thought this was really silly. You want it to come across as like this character genuinely did this.
That's why the show's so funny. It, like, I really like what you said about taking the sillier, goofier aspects seriously, because I feel like in creativity, I feel like all creativity is sort of having fun, but having fun very seriously. Like, yes. like an athlete, you know what I mean? Like, we're here to do a job. It's a fun job, but at the end of the day, like, you can't have something where you're goofing off, even if what you're doing is extremely funny, right?
Exactly. No, that's entirely correct. You know, yeah, like, and of course, like, we have a bunch of fun in the studio. Like, yeah, we laugh a lot at a lot of things and stuff and joke around, but it's like when it comes down to it and stuff, like, we are taking this seriously, because like everyone is a fan of something. And so each show that we work on, this is like someone's everything.
You know,
like, we all have like some type of show, some type of movies or series or franchise, something that's like that's our thing.
And so
What's
you want to
yours?
see it. Star Wars.
Star Wars? Yeah.
Star
You're a Star
Wars.
Wars guy?
Oh,
Yeah, me
yeah.
too. I've been going back through them. Okay, check this out. Kelby and I have this debate. I really like Rise of Skywalker. Kelby thinks it's trash. Where do you fall on this scale?
Oh, wow. All right. Okay. I'm gonna have to agree with you both specifically because one, I do think it's trash. However, I was not a fan of The Last Jedi due to many, many reasons. And
Yeah.
so by the time Rise of Skywalker was on its way, like I already knew this the whole point of this movie, they're gonna try to answer questions and fix things that
Right. They're unfucking the last Jedi, basically. They're trying to untangle that.
yes. And so I knew that whatever this was gonna be, it was gonna be heavy. And so it was, you know, it's
It feels
gonna
like
be.
four movies, dude. It feels like four or five movies in one, but I like that aspect of it. I don't know. I really liked, I like all the Star Wars movies actually, but I'm easy. I'm really easy. I don't.
Okay, hey, fair enough, fair enough. And overall, like, you know, hey, you everyone loves what they love. No one should shame anyone for loving that.
Love is
Me,
love.
love is love. I love the original trilogy, and I love the prequels only because like that was like. The prequels was like my era of like I was alive during this
Yeah,
and
my mom took me out of class in sixth grade to go watch Phantom Menace. So,
really
yeah, that was. Those have a special place in my heart. I was showing them to my boy, and they're—I mean, they're fine.
they're
They're
fine
fine.
they're fine
Yeah, they're all right.
yeah see
Like I said, I'm easy, so I'm like, yeah, it's cool. The pod race is awesome. The pod race
pot
holds up,
yeah see
and the
okay
Darth Maul fight. Those two
that
scenes
was
hold up.
My favorite. Like, I didn't even know. All right. So when episode one came out, I wasn't even aware. Like, I was a huge fan of the original trilogy. I had a few action figures. And I had Luke when he was on Dagobah training, and so like that was like my favorite toy until I got Luke, he wasn't on. No, he was on Hoth. Yeah. And so those were my two. And I would have that, Ninja Turtles,
He had
Spider-Man.
the little
Boom.
Yoda backpack.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
And
yeah,
like,
yeah.
and so that was like my jam. And I didn't know that the prequels had happened, or at least not episode one. And it wasn't until like 2 years after where it popped up on like TV, like a pay-per-view or something, and I was like at my cousin's house, and then I see the Darth Maul scene, like I flip through the channels, that pops on, and then I see these two guys that look like they look like they're dressed up as Jedi, but it's like this can't be a Star Wars movie because it's like. It's only the original trilogy, and like these guys look super, super young and stuff. And then there's some dude with like the red face and horns, and it's like, nah, he looks cool, but this is not. This looks like it could be like a fanfic or something or Star. This couldn't be. And then the dude pulls out the lightsaber, and then it was double. It was like my jaw dropped, and it's like, oh my God,
I
what
think,
is
dude,
this?
I think every kid when the second blade came out was just like, what
That
the
was
fuck?
the coolest shit. I
Yeah.
remember
Yeah,
that.
it was cool. And there was, you sp talk about fan ones, early Ebaum's world. That was a genre of video, was using Duel of the Fates and then kind of doing your own Star Wars battle to varying degrees of production and, you know, quality, right? But yeah, that was a whole early, like, now we have the ice bucket challenge and TikTok trends, but back in the day, we used to
Oh
make Duel
man.
of the Fates videos. You remember
That's
Star
sad.
Wars Kid? That poor
Yes.
guy, that poor kid
Yeah.
who like he was practicing his
It was like in his garage.
and some bullies found the tape, and then I remember that was like early viral stuff too, of the Star Wars Kid getting edited into like different movies and, you know, like
the Star Wars kid made it into a Tony Hawk game.
Really?
Yeah. Tony Hawk's Underground 2. If you in the Boston level, actually, there's like a, if you go up a ramp, you can crash into a window and you're in Star Wars kid's like apartment or whatever. He's in there like,
hopefully Star Wars kid got a check off of that.
I hope might as so. Well.
I wonder what Star Wars kid is up to now. I'm going to look that up.
He's voicing anime, I think.
Yeah, he's hey. Shannon works with him, doesn't even know. Have to go to work, be like, were you the Star Wars kid? That's your big that's like your big fanboy moment. You're like, I love your work, dude.
Force is strong with you.
Force is strong with you. So in terms of, so when you went into this, were you into anime at all?
I wasn't like a massive fan, but I knew what anime was, and I thought it was like, I didn't know that there were so many different titles and shows.
Right.
Yeah, like when I was younger, like the first anime that I watched was Ronin Warriors, and it was like, that was the first time I was like, what is this? Like the whole style.
It's a badass anime.
Yeah. And like, and so, but that was like the introduction, and then I feel like everyone's seen Dragon Ball.
Yep.
And stuff. And then, but like, I was a fan of Gundam, and and so it's like, okay, these are really cool. And Ghost in the Shell. But it's like I knew what it was, and I thought it was cool. Like, I thought it was really cool, but I wasn't like, you know, massively into it. And it wasn't until I started working for an anime company that, one, I realized, like, oh my goodness, like, there is so much more anime that I didn't even know about. And so, you know, you start to go through the history of everything and just like seeing just the depth. And I kind of from working there, I kind of realized, okay, like, these are my genres that I like personally, and just like, this is like kind of my jam. But I kind of got reintroduced in like the proper way of like, this is what anime is. And so, yeah, it's cool. Like, and really just like the fact that, you know, my whole thing is I'm a storyteller. I love stories and I want to tell stories. Just the fact that when I got introduced, and it's like, there are hundreds of thousands of all these different stories that have been told and to tell, to me, I was just like blown away by that. And even still to this day, like that's like a consistent, like, happy feeling that I get, is because I get to work on just all of these stories, all of these are different worlds. And so, you know, like, I'm really thankful for this job, because it's like, I get to do this. I get to work on these shows, all these different stories. And it's like, it different preference, different genres and stuff, whatever it is. It's like, I get to work on it.
How much liberty are you given in the director's chair? Since, because like, you're taking existing shows and it's like sort of remixing, translating, you know, you got to start over in a completely new language, which gives it a lot of times with, you know, the way you have to change words because of how fast they speak and matching up on screen, all that kind of shit. Like, how much liberty are you given in terms of like, okay, here's how I interpret the vibe of this show. I want to maybe make this scene, it might have come across a certain way in the Japanese version, but I think this scene should like go darker or like shit like that.
I would say like we do get I guess it depends on your perspective, but like I would say we do get a lot of freedom. The thing that you cannot change is like, no matter what, I cannot change the story itself, where it's like, this is what's supposed to happen. These are the pinpoint events. And, you know, these are the emotions that are supposed to hit.
in this scene or at this point in the story, where it's like I can't change like the story saying that like Hatsuki, instead of stabbing this person and then becoming the villain on the cliffhanger of the last episode, I'm just gonna rewrite this to where it's like, no. Hatsuki was a good guy, and he's like, I'm gonna stab you, and but you, I'm gonna give you like a health serum, and you'll survive. Like, you know, I can't change like things like that, where it's like, no, this is supposed to happen one way. I can't rewrite it to make it seem like it's not supposed to go that way. However, like, you know, when it comes to like writing for American audiences and stuff, like, there are things that you know, don't translate well, or like, you know, you have to, it's a part of your skill to find a smooth transition to like adapt it to English audiences, where it's like some things translate well, some things don't. Part of your
Can you give
job
me an
is to,
example?
well, okay, there's there may be some jokes that are told in Japanese that really wouldn't make sense, you know, if you translate it in English. Not that like and if you read it, like, it's like, you know, yeah, I on paper I get it. But if I, you know, like, there may be a word or a few words that like rhyme, and it's a part of the joke when you say it in Japanese, but in English, you know, the wording, like, I may be say, like, you know, and not just an example, like, I do not know Japanese, but if I made a joke, if there was a joke about a phone and something else that rhymed with phone in Japanese and stuff, but then we translate it into English and it's like, these don't rhyme at all. Like, the English word for phone is phone, you know, and then like this joke that we're trying to connect it to, like, it does not rhyme with phone in English and stuff. So it's like, that wouldn't make sense. So
You see that a lot with like fan translations of manga, right? Before the manga comes over, and somebody will be like, "You're a total foam pig." And you're like, "Wait, what? Foam pig? Doesn't make any sense." So yeah, I get what you mean.
They
So
have all those asterisks, like all the speech
be
bubbles with a
like, "Well, in
million
Japanese, you
asterisks,
see
and
like
in
phone and
Japanese, this
pig
means
actually
that,
rhyme."
Now, something like that, it's like, okay, well, I know that, I mean, a joke is supposed to go here, and we are supposed to make something funny. So it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm not gonna just have it translated and just, it just misses the mark and stuff. So it's like, you know, I'm gonna take liberties, and I'm gonna put something funny there, or and I'm gonna, if we can't go, you know, like, if the joke doesn't translate at all whatsoever and stuff, then I'm going to place a joke that's somewhat related to this world or the situation at hand and stuff to make it like a smooth scene and stuff, you know. And then as far as like, you know, like you talk about mouth flaps, because like part of the job writing and stuff, like, you want to properly, you know, translate, where it's like the words, the dialogue, it's it flows smoothly and makes sense, you know, as well as fitting mouth flaps. So it's like, it's a technique that you learn and you get better at over years and stuff, where it's like, you know, yeah, like these mouth flaps, like, I got boom, 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 like three or four mouth flaps here, then a little pause, and then this one. And it's like we're looking at everything. So it's like it's kind of like a technique of not just getting it to flow, getting the conversation to flow, but also fitting mouth flaps as well, to where it's like your brain, you know, like when your brain and you're watching this, then if something is off, then subconsciously you pick up that something was weird there. And so, you know, it's our job to like make sure that that doesn't happen, where it's like, yeah, this actually flows and seems very and is very fluent. So, you know, when you see those mouth flaps, it's not like way off, and you don't, like, they stop talking, but the mouth flaps are still moving, or the mouth flaps, you know, or vice versa and stuff. And then, or it's like, yeah, I get what they said, but it was very weird how they said it. Like,
that shouldn't be a situation. So, you know, it's director's job as well as writers, and pretty much every director at Sentai is also a writer as well. And so it's our job to make sure that everything flows and that you don't hit situations like that where it's like, well, that was weird, or that sounded weird, that looked weird. It's like, no, like we want to keep you engaged in the story. But
Which
yeah,
sounds a
when
whole like it sounds a whole lot like like rap. Like you want to hit the beat right, and a lot of times like with well that's how I like way back I like came from wanting to be a rapper, getting into writing, and but that even with the way I write, I still have like just kind of a beat of the way that I want the words to flow. And it sounds a whole lot like that with the okay, here's the animation beats, here's the flow of the way that their mouths are moving. Now we got to kind of match this up. That's what
Exactly.
that's what I call the anime, huh? Which I think so if I'm if I'm getting this right, because when my work, like I had a book that was translated into French and it was much longer because French people are wordier than people in English. And they had to do little asterisks by some of my jokes where it was like, by the way, guys, this is a sex joke and this is a joke about poop and et cetera, right? Because it just didn't translate. But
They
that
didn't do a
length of
good job
time.
translating it,
Yeah,
though.
exactly. They should have just let it roll. Let the French figure it out. But no, like I call it the anime, huh? Because it's clearly the Japanese is a lot longer than the English translation. So you'll have somebody talking and they say something to the effect of, I'm gonna power up and then when I do that, I'm gonna kill you. Like and they kind of just like make a noise to finish off the mouth laps. You know what I mean? It's like I get it. Dragon Ball did that all the time, right? That's just you gotta fill that space with something.
You gotta fill the space, but you also gotta make it not weird.
Well,
So
yeah,
that's
and the anime huh is definitely weird, which is I think why a lot of people are like, "Ooh, that dub didn't exactly work." But I like what you're saying too about having to rework jokes because it has to be context dependent and it has to make sense and it has to be funny and it has to match up with the mouth flaps. But you can't just translate the joke because it wouldn't make any sense. That's one of the advantages that like manga, because manga does the asterisks all the time, right? They're like, this is a joke, you know? But you can't.
You can't. I mean, and it's like, and really, like, you know, the smoother an anime, it's like the better the writing and that goes into it, because it's like, you know, yeah, there are a lot of shows that like it translates, you know, like this doesn't translate in this way, but the way that they worked around it, or their solution to getting past that, oh, this is wonderful. And then, you know, like the anime, like, yeah, there of course are a lot of moments where it's like, why is this person's mouth hanging open for like 3 seconds and stuff? And it's like sometimes, and part of, like I said, part of the technique is like, well, I know what the tone, I know what the tone is, I know what needs to be said, but if I need to rewrite that line in a different way to get the same point across, but I'm looking at that open mouth ah, and it looks like more like an ah instead of an oh and stuff like that, then, well, what words can I use, and how can I take this approach, and how the pacing as well, and stuff like that. All that goes into effect. And then not only that, like, you know, because you're looking at just, you know, you pay attention to syllables and stuff and enunciations. And then not only that, but like, if you want to take, like, which, you know, everyone does do this, like on the technical side, because you're also looking at the character themselves. Like, who is this character? How do they talk? How is their diction? How is their dialect? You know, what words it would this person's talk like this, or say or use these words? Would they apply this or that? Yes or no, and stuff. So you're also giving it some more layers and stuff too on how to approach writing for each character. Because, like, you know, and that can, you know, it could be a tougher tougher puzzle to figure out and stuff, depending on the character as well.
I think that this is some free sauce. I'm just going to throw this out there. But whenever you have the anime put auto tune on it. Just blow people's fucking minds.
I think I would actually get in trouble.
Like, what is this?
Yeah.
The anime T-Pain.
But yeah, but yeah, like, especially nowadays, like, you know, yeah, like, of course, you'll still come across animes that come off like that, but it depends on, like, the people working on it and the level of detail and attention that they give it. But as for the most part, pretty much, at least now, you know, it's very much focused on. And just like I said, with, like, all those details, all the things to look out for, that's what everyone does look out for. So it's not an easy thing. And, you know, like, it actually is a tough job and stuff, which, you know, I hear every now and then, like, you know, someone that just watches a show, like, oh, yeah, I can do this. I could just, you know, write it like this or that and stuff. It's like, well, if you really look at it, like, not saying that, you know, not saying that you couldn't, but it does require a whole lot more focus and work than you think. You know, it's not just slapping some words together and boom. It's like, oh no, like, we're looking at all of the details, you know.
Yeah, so, yeah. But I mean, which is how it used to be done that way. I watched a YouTube short documentary about Cyber City
8808.
Yeah. Cyberpunk classic. And the translator for it was like, yeah, they sent it to me and I just transcribed it in, like, just as he was listening to it, he transcribed it. And he was like, and Pulp Fiction and Snatch and Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels were really popular. So I threw a bunch of F-bombs in there. And then we got the actors in the studio. This was like the early days of anime dubbing, right? Mm-hmm. And it was one take wonders. So they were in there, the words were flashing across the screen, and they basically told these people, go, just say it. And they had that thing pumped out from Japanese to English in like a week, and you can hear it when you listen to it, and it's it's really funny. But it's interesting, how long would you say an average, like, not for a whole series but for an episode, how long does that take to dub?
It depends. It really depends, because
sure, yeah, that makes sense.
Like, yeah, like, especially for a series, but if you're looking at a show, I mean, for, like, the different things to look out for is, like, okay, well, we need to dub one show. Okay, well, how many characters are in this show? Because if you're seeing a bunch of characters, then, you know, you can, that time can increase. If it's a dialogue heavy show, then that time really increases. So it's like nothing is ever really the same. Per se, because, like, yeah, you can be dealing with a lot of stuff or very little. Like, you can, if let's say, like, this is like a slice of life show that's focusing on just cooking, and you've got three characters that just, like, hardly say anything, you could probably get through that show fairly quickly, like, you know, week, 2 weeks, or, you know, depending on how many lines of dialogue they have. Or, you know, it could still be like three characters and it is, like, massively heavy. Like, everyone's, like, cranking out a bunch to say, and that can take you weeks, because it's like, that's a lot of hours in the booth.
It's a lot of yapping. Specific.
Yeah. And then not only that, but, like, look at these shows, and, like, take a look in an episode, just whatever episode of an anime that you like, and look at the cast, or just look at how many characters you see from beginning to end. And so it's like, okay, episode 23 minutes or 24, it's 30, like, great, that's easy. But focus in on just how many characters are in that show, and then think about
Every individual character was played by an actor, and every single actor had to, you know, had to be scheduled with studio sessions to record with the director and engineer to record all of their stuff. So every single character, where it could be like 60 characters were in episode one. Well, I can tell you for sure that the director and engineer at least recorded through that series 60 times, at least. So it's like, you know, you're going through the show with every character, with every actor and stuff from beginning to end. So it's like,
Golly, I didn't know that. That's a lot of watching these anime. So you
yeah,
know these
it's
things by heart.
exactly. And you're supposed to
What
know them by
happens in
heart
Ninja
before.
Kamui? How does that end?
I'm not gonna tell you. But it's like, but yeah, like, but that's part of the job. Like you're supposed to know the ins and out before we even get to the production side of bringing in the actors. But then once we get to the production side, we're recording every actor from like throughout the entire series. And so just multiply that, like, you know, okay, we've recorded with this actor and stuff. Boom, 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 beginning to end. Boom. All right. We've got another actor. Everyone has scheduled time. We're filling out this entire series. So it's not just a quick boom and done. It's like multiply that by how many people, as well as the dialogue count and stuff for each individual character, and we're piecing it all together. And so, yeah, you watch an episode within like 30 minutes. For us, it didn't take us 30 minutes to get this recorded and done. It took us some weeks.
Do you have a favorite character type to work with since you spend all this time with so many different voices and arcs and like is there a character archetype or personality that
No, there. I don't have a favorite character type. I will say, and then like you know, like there, I because I'm fascinated by like all types of like characters in a show. But I will say that as far as like performer, as far as the actors themselves, I am always happy when, you know, I get to work with someone who is like very enthusiastic and very just like just fully charged to like let's do this, like let's go, like which I mean pretty much just about everyone is, but I find it very like refreshing and just it hypes me up when someone comes in and they're just like really excited to just like give it their all and like let's push the limits, let's go the distance with this. And so it's kind of like, you know, that fuel fuels me and stuff, and it's like a constant, like that energy is consistent from beginning to end. And I just love that when people show up and they're just like really hyped to work. And so I will say like that's the one thing that like that gets me like happy, like excited and stuff, because it's like just it's really just the level or what you bring to the table, like everyone senses that, everyone picks that up. And so it's always awesome when you start off on that high note and stuff, whether it be like a short series or long series, it's like that's like that energy like stays with you. And so, you know, like you can be veteran actor, you can be doing it for a few years, you can be brand new, but if you are happy to be here and you are excited and just like willing to like learn and go and stuff, even if it may be like a slow process, even if like I'm still learning, but you know, whatever you got, or like you know, whatever I need to learn or whatever I need to practice is like, yeah, well let's work through it, let's work through it. But that tenacity and excitement, like if you are happy to be here and happy to work and learn and you know sharpen your tools to get better, then that hypes me up, because it's like that shows me that you care, and that shows me that like hey, if you stick with this, like you're gonna reach so many new levels in your performance,
career, your skill set and stuff. And it's like that gets me hyped up.
Anime is the perfect playground, I think, for that kind of attitude too, because I mean, that's kind of the energy you want in a hyper emotional medium such as anime.
Yeah.
Where everything is just extremely heightened. I can just imagine that energy is incredibly infectious in the studio, if not maybe sometimes tiresome.
there are some people that are just naturally energetic where it's like, all right, well, we'll schedule you like after noon. I can't deal with you in the morning right now. But yeah, and I can imagine like it, like the fact that with anime, like it's just like movies and TVs. Like there's a bunch of different genres that you're dealing with, and we're not just working on one type of genre. We're going across the board, you know, and so that has to be like fun and exciting for each actor that comes in and stuff, because like, you know, you can be coming in today and I'm working on like, you know, this a romance show or whatever, and then I'm coming in another day and I'm doing horror and stuff. Like, you know, you're going all around the genres and stuff, which is exciting because it's like you have unlimited variety and stuff, which is awesome. And then not only that, but if you want to compare this to like being on set, like when you're performing on location, on set, like you are on location, you are going to be focusing on this scene unless you have like a company move in the middle of the day or whatever, but you are preparing and stuff, then you got to worry about, okay, camera, light setup, and stuff. Like you're gonna be like rehearsing your lines and then just kind of staged over here and stuff until the set is ready to go. You got to focus on your blocking and stuff. I need to be here, this and that. I need to turn here and stuff, and then the camera is gonna be right here, you know, being very aware on where to look, where not to look. And it's like a whole other extra level of things to focus and worry about, as well as like delivering your line on the certain cue and boom, boom, boom. But when you're recording anime, like you're in a studio, you're in a booth, recording in a booth, and it's like, well, you don't have to worry about them taking like a few hours to like work on the light setup, or you don't have to worry about, you know, the camera being placed here, here, and here and stuff like that. Like, no, for this scene, you're going to be like, there's going to be a bunch of explosions and this is going to be happening and stuff. So I need you to project and do this, this, and that. But you don't have to worry about, you know, them rigging up this and stuff. Or you don't have to worry about the lights being set up here. No, we're going to dive in. We're going to break down the scene. We're going to find your voice and we're going to dive into the scene like right now. And then guess what? Once we're done with this scene, we're going to jump to this other scene that's completely different. We can be on the moon, on a moon base, and now for this one and stuff. And this is the breakdown of what's going on here. And guess what? We're there. It doesn't take us a whole other week to get there. We don't have to worry about a company move, and then we don't have to set up a snack table or here or there and stuff. And then you'll be in your trailer for like a few hours until we're ready to go. It's like, no, we're just jumping to this next scene. Like, that's the convenient part, because you don't have to worry about blocking and camera and lights and stuff. It's like, no, like we can dive into the scene now. We can jump and focus on this and that. Now, like, you know, when it comes to projection and volume and stuff like that, that of course, you know, in your performance, we need to make it realistic. So it's like, yeah, if we're in a train station, you've got all of this background noise happening. You've got, you know, it's crowded and stuff like that. And then you need to talk to this character that's across the room over there. Then I need you to project, you know, like you're not going to break the mic. You're, you know, don't feel contained. No, like we can capture your voice. Like, don't feel like you are stuck in a tiny box. No, project out and stuff. Like, we will adjust our levels. We can control the levels. Like, I need you to talk to that person that's all the way over there across the crowd. That's what I need from you. So, you know, that's, and that's the cool thing about being in the studio, where it's like, you're not, there are certain constraints that you don't have being in a booth compared to being on set, and things you don't have to worry about.
Is a whole lot of this going on mental, or is there a, do you get any kind of that background noise, like for the, like on the actor side of it, do you get to like hear any of the train whistles, or is it all just like, here's the setup and here's your lines and this is what I need from you?
Oh no, you can hear all of it. Like, so if you're an actor that's working on this show and stuff like that, which, you know, the big thing about like my job, you know, and it's you know, it's not just the director that gets all the stuff done. It's a whole team. And so like you have your director, and really like when you're recording in the booth, you have your actor, you have your director, and you have your audio engineer, which that is like a lot tight relationship between director and engineer, because the director focuses a lot on the performance aspect and all the details of the nuances and stuff of getting this and this and that and hitting this notes and that and stuff. And the engineer is focused a lot on the technical side of things, where it's like, oh, you know, you're a little bit low, or I'm hearing some clicks here and there and stuff, or like some of the enunciation, you know, like we both may hear and be like, kind of confirm, like, yeah, did this sound like, you know, they slipped up here and stuff? Yeah, absolutely. Or you this person may have they may have delivered this line wonderfully, but they went off mic mid line and stuff, where it's like, no, we need to get that again, because like, yeah, that's an issue. Or we may have peaked and stuff, you know. Or you know what, there was a little bit of vocal fry in this line, and if it wasn't like motivated intentionally, where it's like, no, this, like, this person needs to like take a sip of water,
right?
And then we need to get it again. Like, there's a lot that goes into it. But as far as like an actor like being in the booth, so like we can control things that you hear, where it's like they're hearing the scene as well. So like, as far, if we're in a train station and like in the final product, you're watching this, there's a character in the train station, there's like these noises going off here and there, there's crowd chatter and stuff in the background, they can hear all of that, like as far as like the environmental noise and stuff. And you know, we can turn it up, we can turn it off, we can turn it down or louder and stuff. And so, you know, it helps kind of with the immersion. Now, when it comes to like dialogue, like if since we're specifying, so if there's like train sounds or whistles and noises, then yeah, like we can, you know, that'll for the most part be in there. But when it comes to like crowd chatter, like, you know, this is a crowded train station, a lot of when we call that walla, a lot of that background noise or walla, we also record as well. So, you know, it's not something that's just already established, or it's like you don't ever have to worry about it. It's like, no, that's also a part of our jobs too, where, you know, we schedule people as well for like background chatter and stuff. So the things that you hear, the noises and stuff, the things that you wouldn't even focus on, but it helps with the environment, that is recorded as well.
Right. Yeah. No, that makes sense, because instead of, you know, speaking a bunch of Japanese in the background, they're like, hey, you check out that new Mexican OT joint and whatever.
All of it's important.
I'm curious about what, just some things, whatever comes to mind. It's a vague question, but I'm sure you'll be fine with it. What have you learned about storytelling from your time directing and writing on these anime?
Well, I've definitely learned or gotten to know more about tropes. Okay. So when I was in college, you know,
I went to film school, and like I had courses and stuff on script writing and structure, how to build a skeleton, and point of no return, and just all of the different things to from beginning to end, like cause reaction, like everything needs to be motivated by this and that and stuff like that. And really, I would say if anything that I've learned, it's like, if there was any reason for me to question my professors and like from college, like, no, my story, like, yeah, my story is different, or like this has its own structure. I don't need to follow these structure or these rules. It's like, no, there is definitely
I've been saying this. Yes. Please continue, but this has been the drum that I've been beating for the past year or so. There's a 100% structure you have to follow. And then you can color within those lines, right? You can add your own flavor to it, but that doesn't mean there's no structure.
Yeah,
Been beating my head
exactly.
against the wall trying to explain this to people. There's a formula.
There is. And like there is one thing that I had a professor that told me this back in college, which I follow it to this day, and it's so true. It's just true. It's like your script is your blueprint. If that is not fleshed out and you don't have a strong foundation there, everything else is going to fall apart. Yeah, you cannot just like off the whim just this and that. No, that is like, oh my God, like focus and work on your scripts. Your pre-pro is also very, very important, because that sets the tone, that smooths out the everything else. But like if you don't have a solid story, then everything else, it's gonna crumble real quick.
And there's so many templates too. I mean, I like Dan Harmon's story wheel, that 8-point wheel. A character needs something, so they cross a threshold. They go through a trial, they find what they need, but they're changed, they return home, and now they're the master of both worlds. It works
Exactly.
every time, every
Yeah.
time.
Yeah, you need obstacles for everything, but it's like there has to be a reason for someone to do something. Like it like think of it as like coding, or just, I mean, really just anyone's reason to do anything. Like, like, okay, for me, like I was in bed sleeping. Okay. I wake up. Well, I mean, there's many reasons that I could wake up from, where it's like, oh, I got all my hours of sleep, or oh, I need to get up to go to the restroom, or I need to get up because I heard something, someone knocking on my door. There needs to be like, where you're plugging in cause and effect, reasons for me to
Cause and
like.
effect, yeah, stimulus and response, right? And getting up to go to the restroom is maybe not a story, but if someone's knocking on your door, now we got a story. Who's at the
Exactly.
door? You're
Exactly.
automatically hooked. Like if you told me, if you, Shannon, told me, like, dude, I woke up last night and I heard a knocking on my door. As a
Now I'm.
human being, I'm immediately like, then what happened?
Yeah,
Then what?
now I'm
But
hooked.
if you told me, dude, I woke up last night and I used the restroom, I'd be like, all right, I mean, good for you, dude. I'm happy to hear that, but I don't really know what the story is there.
Then something jumped out of the medicine cabinet. Like,
There we
oh,
go. There we go.
yeah,
Yeah.
but it's like there has to be a reason. And then for your characters, you have to care for your characters, like I mean, love or hate or whatever, but as far as like a relatable character, you either feel sympathy or empathy for. Like, I have to connect with the character, or with these characters in some type of way, or else it's like I'm just watching this just for the sake of watching this, and who wants to do that? Like, I, and of course there are shows and movies that exist that are unfortunately like that, but it's like if I can't relate to these characters in some way, or have like some type of understanding, a solid understanding, then it's like I'm not invested. I'm not going to be invested. And
Right,
all of this
right.
goes back to structure.
No, it's all structure. Yeah, because I was watching A Comic Akill, and you can see it in that too. I mean, every episode begins with Brandon Sanderson is really good about this, the fantasy writer. He talks about how every story has to have a promise, progress, and then payoff, right? So the beginning offers a promise. What keeps viewers or readers hooked is the progress, and then you have to stick the landing. You have to do the payoff, right?
Yeah.
But in what are some other ones I watched recently? Chainsaw Man. I watched Chainsaw Man recently, and that's really good. Like every episode, it kind of tells you what's going to happen before it happens, right? Mm-hmm. Like you know where it's going.
You know where it's going, but how are you going to
how are you going to get there? And when's he going to pull the ripcord and be Chainsaw Man? And then when he does, that's the payoff.
Yeah.
You're like, oh shit. Hell yeah. He jumped into the big demon's mouth, but then he pulled the cord and now he's tearing that shit up. So I'm trying to think of a negative example, but I can't think of one because again, I'm easy. If story's done well,
in
dude,
anime, it's really hard too, because anime, it seems like most of it does just adhere to those restrictions that a lot of times some of the more, I guess, experimental of us tend to fight against, like the trope. Like David and I have been writing, both of us, for a really, really long time, and are just now coming around to things like that, like plot and tropes and like embracing structure. And but it seems like anime has never really deterred from that. It's like, no, this is how you do it. And
I would say the, like, you always have your tropes, but how, like, you can reinvent, or just the way that you
oh dude use. Have you watched I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, but Frieren or Frieren, you guys watched that yet? It's on Crunchyroll. It's an elf who is a part of a Final Fantasy band of heroes, and the show begins with them completing their quest, and the show is asking like really interesting questions, like what do these heroes do after they have killed the dragon, saved the princess, and then they have to get on with their lives? And then there's this other question that, like, you know, she's an elf, so she lives for like 1,000 years, so now she has to watch her troop die, basically, as she gets older. And so but every episode still has that promise, progress, and payoff. And so you can subvert these classical storytelling tropes, but you still kind of have to stick to that episode by episode formula in order for it to work. It's really good. Y'all should watch it.
Okay. And what was it again?
Okay, I'll spell it.
You don't know.
I don't really know, dude. It's F-R-E-I, or wait, no, F-R-I-E. R-E-N? Frieren? Frieren?
Frieren. Frieren. Okay.
That's good shit.
Sounds like a title they should have workshopped a little bit, translating that.
they should have called it just like...
Should have called it like Star Wars.
Old ass elf. Yeah, yeah.
Star
yeah.
Wars.
The old elf.
Well, Shannon, is there anything you can say about what you're working on at the moment, or excited about at the moment?
Well, there are two shows that are currently airing on HIDIVE, which is a streaming service. One show is called Ragna Crimson, and we are just beginning the second core, which is like the second half of the season. So go and check that out, as well as Dark Gathering. So if you're into horror, supernatural, that would be the show for you.
Hell Hell yeah. Well, I'm hyped to check both of those out. Thank you so much for coming on. This was a blast, a pleasure to get kind of behind the scenes of how all this goes down. Real fascinating shit.
Yeah, I thank you so much for having me. I think it's really cool. Like to me, it's still kind of new that like people really want to like know what goes on, like how everything gets made. And so to me, that's really fun and exciting because it's like, oh, like really? Okay. So no, thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And keep in touch,
Absolutely.
I'm gonna stop it right there.